Well, hey guys, this is Joey and Ray with Senior Marketing Specialists, and this is A Human Connection. I have been extraordinarily blessed over my career to meet some really fascinating and successful people, and I get to now bring those conversations to you. So I hope that we can all learn and grow from each other. I hope you enjoy. So as I've mentioned on all of these different editions that we've had, I like to take the entire insurance industry that I'm a part of and look at each different piece of that puzzle and talk to some of the movers and shakers and people who have had great success in each of those areas. So whether it's the person from the carrier who's had great success at that level, other FMOs like myself, other people who are just making an impact in this industry. And then ultimately, I want to talk to as many of the agents as we can, those people that are out there doing what this industry is built around, which is sitting face-to-face, phone-to-phone, internet-to-internet, whatever, with that senior client and protecting them and doing the work that we all kind of stand in the background, if you will, and help and support that agent. So today I am super excited to be able to introduce all of you to a good friend of our company for many, many years, Gordon Brown of Raymore, Missouri, which if you don't know where that's at, is near Kansas City or the Lee Summit area in Kansas City. Gordon has worked with our agency for many, many years. But for those of you that haven't had the opportunity to meet Gordon, first of all, welcome, Gordon.
Thank you.
And we'd love to hear a little bit about your background. So tell us first, we'll peel back the layers as we talk here today. But for all of us right now, just kind of give us a little bit of your background and how you got to where you are today as one of the top Medicare agents in the country.
Well, I'm going to kind of blame that on you, I guess.
I'll take that.
Well, yeah, I moved from Little Rock, Arkansas to Kansas City area back in December of 04 and didn't really want to pick up where I left off down there. And I had a great agency down there doing individual, small group and ancillary products, cancers, accident type plans, got my start. A lot of people probably don't even recognize the name anymore of Combined Insurance Company.
Yeah.
You know, where you used to, but of course, you know, that's where I learned a lot of my marketing stuff from. And when I moved up here, kind of got into the final expense and mortgage protection market for a brief period of time. And then I got to do an analysis on the money. I was like, wow, you have to sell a lot of this to really get a good, you know, income stream like I did in the health markets, you know, down in Arkansas. And I believe it was one early September-ish day, maybe October. I mean, maybe October. Can't remember. Raining. And got on the phone with you, and I was sitting under a church awning, you know, eating lunch in the car. And, you know, I got to talking about, you know, hey, what else is there up here? You know, what's going on, you know, with this market? And you're like, what do you know about Medicare? Well, all I had known is about the six people I had on the books from Arkansas that had aged in their individual health products to Medicare. Yeah. And all I put them on was Mutual of Omaha Plan F, because that's all I probably have one of the smallest Mutual of Omaha numbers in a lot of the surrounding area. Here, I laugh whenever somebody else here in Alphas gets a Mutual of Omaha number, and it's like this long.
Yeah. You were seven. And that was your number.
Right. Yeah, it starts with a three. So yeah, I'll leave it at that. It's only six digits. So, or actually five digits. And, but anyway, I had the same number since, you know, the early 90s. Anyway, that was my answer to you. I'm like, well, I've got about six of them on the books. And so, and you gave me some stuff to think about in that phone call and some numbers, and you emailed me some stuff. And basically, I just cut the workday short, drove home, you know, went to my home office there, started crunching the numbers. And I'm like, I can do this, you know. And within about 75 days of that phone call, I qualified for a cruise.
No way.
By banging doors and selling Medicare supplements. And this is before Medicare Part D, you know. And, you know, in Medicare Advantage, I was strictly selling their supplement plans, you know, and wasn't selling anything. I just walked up to people's door and said, hey, this is who I am. This is what I do. And you guys were truly available all the time, you know, because obviously I didn't know that much about the Medicare market. And every time I ran into something, it was, but wait, I know who to ask. And I would call you guys right in front of clients, you know. Or as soon as I left and didn't know something, I'm calling you on the way back to the phone or calling somebody out there. And you guys were always a wealth of information, you know, and that's just the way I have. I've always been, you know, if I'm going to do it, I want to know everything about it. You know, right. We go to the doctor, we want to, you know, we want that person to know everything. We go to our accountant, we want them to know everything. Why shouldn't we be in the same, you know, light and same scrutiny as those other professionals that the, you know, the public comes, you know, depends on, you know? Is it in a fly by night business? It's something you truly need to be a practitioner of, you know? Yeah.
I love that. I love, so of everything about that whole sentence, I love that you remembered it was a September rainy day the first time we talked.
Right.
All those years ago. I love that. You never know when that next, you know, where that next impact's going to come from, right?
Right. And, you know, when all I hope to do is hand that off and, you know, pass that on or have that effect on somebody else. You know?
Yeah. 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 Isn't that funny that we're both very blessed in that regard, that probably similar in age, similar years in the business, as they say, and to where we've been able to both be at now from our vantage point of, don't try to call me with any, you can call me anytime, but don't call me with any questions about Medicare. That is not, we've got a whole team of people that specialize in that now, no more than I could have ever even dreamt up. And you and your staff and the ability that you've had to grow your agency and adding all the different layers that you've added. It's amazing now to I would imagine for you to look at that, those beginning days and having to knock on doors and having to tell your story. And now you probably, while we're talking, there's probably prospects walking in, clients walking in the door of your office, just needing to see you and get your advice, just like any other professional in town. So it's pretty cool trajectory there that you've been able to do.
It is. It's you know, there's so much more to this business than just, you know, just selling the products. You know, my first appointment this morning was a Social Security disability person that's on Medicare, been on Medicare for years. And she, you know, works at a local Walmart store, worked a little bit too much in 2020. And I guess when you're on disability, every once in a while, the Social Security Administration runs earnings test on you. And they happened to run an earnings test on this girl 2 years ago and deemed her, you know, as making too much money to be on disability. She gets a $30,000 bill from Social Security. Mm-hmm. And so we've been working with Social Security, trying to get that, get her some equitable relief, you know, file appeals and at least set up the payment, because she hadn't received a Social Security check now in about 4 or 5 months. And so there's so much of this business that you're exposed to, and you glean the information and the knowledge and the procedures about how to get people relief on things like that, you know, whenever there is no other resource. I mean, and how do you gain that stuff? How do you pass that off? And that's, you know, as I am, you know, getting close to, okay, maybe I'm not going to be doing this, you know, forever, you know, from, you know, here in a few years, maybe, you know, but how do you pass all that stuff on? Because I only learned that from doing, you know, this business and dealing with Social Security and dealing with the local administrators for so many times, that all these little pieces of information that are so important to a person like that lady that was here this morning. I mean, I couldn't imagine, number one, you know, some of the income some of our people live on, but number two, then having 100% of the income disappear out from under your feet and have a bill that like a brand new car. You know, and the payment due is her entire Social Security check, you know?
Yeah. So how do you prepare for your day, Gordon? I'm always curious, because I'm sure you have a full day, your calendar set probably by your staff as to who's coming in, when. How do you look at those and kind of like, you know, we always use the analogy like a doctor's office. You run your office like a doctor's office. Do you sit down with your staff before everybody comes in and say, okay, tell me a little bit about this person and why are they coming in, and then do the research? You've got enough experience now. Do you just take the clients and then sit down with them and figure out what's going on and then how to solve, or how do you prepare for your day and all the different things that get thrown at you?
Well, like you said, the staff, they pretty much know what cases they're going to need to, you know, give a little bit of a warm up or an on ramp to, you know. Okay. You know, like I said, you know, my second appointment this morning was a lady that turned 65 in January, hadn't done anything, and she's already uninsured for work because she's already retired. And so that means her Medicare benefits don't start till April.
Yikes.
So there's the easy cases. Somebody's turning 65 3 months from now. They're taking Social Security. That's easy. No one even needs to think about that. They're aging in. They just want to come in, sign up for a plan, and they're good to go. But whenever they're, in their IEP, but they need to act, it's, the complicated cases like that. Yeah, we do have a little bit of a write-up. We use, in our agency block situation, there's a lot of notes that we could put on there about somebody's history. We do training on, hey, here's all of the information we need to know ahead of time. And if it looks a little complicated, sometimes before the appointment or the day before the appointment, I'll call and kind of do a telephone inquisition or, questionnaire about, what's the situation, where are we needing, and all that kind of stuff, just in case they need to get some other information,
So walk us through, again, for a lot of the newer, younger agents maybe listening, walk us through what you describe as an easy. So they're turning 65 and they're coming in and they think they know maybe which plan, or which plan you're going to talk to them about. What does that education process look like from the first call to the enrollment when they're sitting across the desk from you?
Well, the easiest cases are those that if they're already drawn Social Security, they're aging or getting close to age 65. They're not here within the last 3 days of the business month, like a lot of them are. But still, so somebody that's already drawn Social Security, well, they already get their Medicare card. There's nothing you have to do there. I don't really care if they could spell Medicare, because that's my job. And I don't care if they think they know they want a supplement, or they think they know they want their brother's Medicare Advantage plan. We are still going to generically educate them on all different pieces and parts of Medicare and how they work instead of or in addition to each other. We're giving them the whole picture. And even if they say, no, I don't want to hear about Medicare Advantage, basically our response there is, you're going to hear about it from somebody.
So you might
as well hear the facts and the truth. And then if you still, want to go with Medicare supplement or Medicare Advantage, whatever, then you have the full facts and the reasoning thereof.
So you start at the beginning of the educational Medicare process, regardless of when they call you and say, hey, Gordon, my brother's got a Plan G with XYZ company. Can I come in and sign up for that too? You're going to start at the very beginning and educate them.
Yeah, you can, but we're going to talk about everything.
Good.
And usually they don't talk about it all until they get here. They're going to have the full two choices conversation, from A to Z, just because a well-informed client is a client that has a lot of good defenses built in. Mm-hmm. And especially in today's world of digital marketing, TV marketing, and all that crap, the best thing you can do is give them a real hard base of knowledge and education about what all the stuff is about TV. And we actually teach part of that in our presentation about, here's what they're talking about, here's the reasoning behind, and all that kind of stuff. Because it really defends, helps them defend themselves against all this quirky marketing, that all those people on the phone care about is just enrolling somebody, whether or not it's the best plan for them.
What would you say is the biggest difference in the client from when you first started to now? Do they feel like they've got more education now because of the internet and the infomercials and everything else? Or are they even more confused now than maybe because there's so much? It could almost work against them, right? There's so much information. Are they more confused now when they come in than they were 15, 20 years ago? Or feel like they're better?
I'm going to say that the TV commercials and all the constant, I take it back to Aon, and you got Viya benefits, like you got 3M and you got AT&T, they've retired and they've sent all their guys, if you retired from AT&T, you're supposed to call Aon. Well, we help a lot of those people because you call an Aon brokerage, your phone number, and Sally gives you one advice today. Bill gives you another advice tomorrow. Chuck gives you totally something next day. And that's what all these people are experiencing on the street. And the biggest thing that's missing is they're not being told why this was the suggestion you gave them. They're like, I talked to Chuck and he says I should do this, and Sally told me I should have done that. Well, why did they tell you should do that? Because, that's one thing we never do to the client. We never tell them what they should do. We try to educate them in a format that by the time I'm done with my 16-minute conversation, something inside them pops, and then they make their decision based on what's best for them and their level of understanding and their expectations. And that's the goal we have. And that's why regardless of how predispositioned you come in here, I'm still going to give you the whole question, you know, conversation and the whole presentation because you're going to go, aha, you know, yes, I knew that's why I wanted to do that. Or you're going to say, maybe I don't want to do that. I want to do this other thing over here. Right. And so, again, that's why, you know, we don't try to have a bias or a reasoning thereof about how somebody should be insured. That's a disservice, you know, because I don't know this person. I just met him 10 minutes ago when they sat down. How am I going to justifiably sit there and tell this person beyond a shadow of a doubt, here's what they should do. The best thing I should do is educate them.
So I would imagine the way that your company has been able to grow over the years, you're not having to knock on a lot of doors right now, probably to drum up business. Is most of your business sitting across from you? Well, one, is most of your business sitting across from you? Or is a lot of that, you know, with COVID and everything over the last couple of years, many agents have been able, even if they weren't before, everybody found it was more comfortable or it was easier than we thought maybe to sell over the phone and work over the phone. So number one, where are they coming from mostly now? And then how do you see your business mix of face-to-face versus they're okay with telephonic or online?
Local clients still crave that face-to-face. And I chalk that up to the confusion factor, you know, the TV, all the telemarketing, all the crap they're getting in the mail. They really want, well, what we're doing right here is a human connection. Right. You know, they want that. They want that. They want to come in. They want to have a membership somewhere. And that's really the way they refer to whenever they come into us. They're like, great, I have a place to go. I have people that I've seen, people that I've touched, people that I'm familiar with, and we're right there in their, you know, communities, you know, because we're in Butler, Missouri, we're in Harrisonville, Missouri, very convenient walk-in locations. They're manned 5 days a week, not 7 days a week. But that gives them that security that I'm not going to have to chase Sally down on the phone, you know, that sold me this plan, you know, gives them that level of confidence that, okay, if I make this decision here and I have questions about it later, I still have some place to go. Now, for the clients we can't meet with, and for some others, you're right. People are more comfortable with doing online, virtual type stuff, electronic type stuff. If they don't really have, you know, great computer skills or knowledge and stuff like that, we mail them, you know, whole plan guides and books and you know, the two choices conversation, everything that person would have seen right here at my desk goes to their house. And it's labeled, you know, we have colored pens and we label and circle and flag. Yeah. And I have an exact copy of what we sent them. So whenever I'm talking to Chuck over the phone, I have exactly what Chuck has in front of him. I'm like, Chuck, look at the pink flag. Chuck, look at number two. You see the red number three, you know, and we walk through the same process that he would have had right here and in front of us. And he's got that stuff that in his hands now. Hard copy that he would have stood up from my desk and gone home with.
Yeah, that's a great idea. So are most of your business then, is that referrals? Is it just building block of clients over the years? Yeah. How has your marketing changed over the last few years? Do you even need to, you know, continue to add and add and add, or is that just through your current client base?
It grows on its own. I mean, like Dan Mangus used to call it, you know, it's a well-oiled machine and you don't really have to do anything left to it. You know, it's the basketball that's spinning around on your finger. Just slap it every once in a while and it keeps going. with this business, I mean, yeah, it's a name recognition. And we probably put more money in 2021 marketing than we had in several years because I opened up the Harrisonville office. We had a certain postcard that we dropped, you know, and basically it didn't say, you know, here's what we do. We're the best or anything like that. It just said, hey, Gordon Brown, agency, we know the A, B, C, and D of Medicare. And we drop that postcard every month, all year long, seeing a few people come in throughout the year. But once our local clients in that area knew we were there, they start coming in, they started referring people. So it automatically started feeding itself. That postcard, whenever AEP finally ramped up, the floodgates busted open up in Harrisonville because it was just a constant. And, you know, me and Darcy would be down here in Butler and we would wonder, why aren't the girls in Harrisonville answering the phone? And so we'd message them through, agency block or Ring Central. And they're like, we got them sitting outside in a waiting room. So, they're like, It was a great year. It really was. So the new location has definitely paid for itself.
What was the deciding factor to one, open your first office? Because being the insurance professional that you are, that is one of the steps. That's not always the first step that an agent can do. Many times it's a few years down the road. What was the deciding factor, the first one, and then now opening the second one in the last few years? What was kind of that deciding factor? And
the first factor was I'd be out here banging doors or serving clients all day long, and I worked long hours, 8 to 8 usually. And usually I would bang on the last door at twilight, So I'd look at the weather app and say, okay, it's going to get dark. Sunset's at 8:30. I bang on the last door at 8:15. Well, then by that time, you got like 5 or 6 applications in your folio. You go home, you got to do apps, you got to submit them. Tomorrow morning, you got to wake up early enough to check pendings. And so my business had automatically just started blowing up down here in Bates County, Missouri. There was no drug plan or no Medicare Advantage plans here. That was it, supplements. And, and I was just writing supplements hand over fist. And it was just, I came out of a subway, looked across the street. There was an office space for rent sign. And in my brain, as fast as it flies sometimes, is like, that'd be great to have a fax machine and a phone number or something so I could do some of this stuff here and not have to work for 2 more hours every night when I got home. And so that's basically where it came from. $250 is a home that was converted to office. And the smallest room we had was $250 a month. And I'd been in and out of there. I'd go in there, do my stuff, return phone calls, check pendings. Then I'd run back out there and try to rack up more clients and more sales. And every time I came back, the principal financial people that managed or owned the building, had the office right there. Every time I came in, he would have more phone numbers and more names of people that had stopped by. He goes, I'm not your secretary, and you may want to just hang out here, So really, I had to settle down and just sit on my butt. And, it was hard, and, we kind of worked out some agreement on that. But then it was, probably about another year and a half after that where I had to finally put somebody in there with me just to kind of take care of that. So I'd still had the freedom to grow the business. The second office was just because I felt like we were just really saturated here, and in the South office. And I'd already, my book of business up in the Harrisonville or South Cass area had grown to pretty good volume. I thought those people kind of deserved what the people down here had, is a place to go, a place to get service, a place to have, hey, they can walk in with it, a little piece of mail and drop it on the desk, and that's it. And like I said, it is more than paid for itself. It's a whole lot more populous area, we're drawing, a lot more affluent clients and a lot more, volume up there, because I mean, those cities up there are probably, 3 to 10 times, the size of what we're dealing with down here. So I expect to see a little bit of an exponential, slope on it, so that's, plans are for the next several years. Yeah.
There a third office in the waiting wing?
Oh man, I could really, I tell you what, everybody and their brother wants to sell in Johnson County, Kansas. My Kansas City, Kansas clients, ask me all the time why I don't have an office over there. And we kind of do. We work out of several different financial brokerages, ERG, which is Elevated Retirement Group, and FCI, which is part of Midwest Trust. They are one of the largest financial brokerages in the Kansas City market. And interesting story about downstream referrals, if anybody wants to hear that one conversation. But anyway, that's, there's just so many people over there, in the Overland Park area. I think this is good enough. I'm up and down. I'm in a linear run. I live in Raymore. I work in Harrisonville and I work in Butler. So back and forth, up and down the same road is good enough.
That's good enough for now. I love it. Well, let's kind of peel back a little bit and talk about what's Gordon's doing when he's not in front of a client or when you're not running up and down the corridor between offices and home. What occupies your time and what are your passions outside of educating clients?
Everybody knows I cycle a lot. We actually have riders on our bicycles at home. I mean, really, we have a lot of really nice bikes. And so we love riding, me and Darcy both.
How many, just tell everybody, it's ridiculous. How many bikes do you guys have between you and Darcy?
About 12.
Yeah. And we're not talking Huffies here. We're talking
I did sell my mountain bike, you know, because the mountain biking sucks up here. You have to go down to Northwest at Arkansas or somewhere else, you know, for that. So we do have all that. Bought a new stationary bike, a Wahoo Kicker, you know, for stationary riding. It shifts on its own and has elevations and all that kind of stuff. It's amazing. We just got into backpacking, or back into backpacking. And, you know, so we're looking to do the Ozark Highland Trail. It's a 165-mile trail across the top of Arkansas. We covered about 18 miles of that last week. Well, Darcy covered about 10, and she severely sprained her ankle. So
I had
a, so we had kind of get a little bit of a self-rescue situation going on there.
Is that a camping, like camp along the way, or is it just a day thing? Okay.
Yeah, camping along the way, self-sufficient, Nice. And we crappie fish a lot. We have a bass boat down on Truman Lake that I haven't seen since last September before AEP started. So, and the girls are saying, I really need it. And so, you know, the girls here are really saying, I need to go check on my boat. So I think I'm getting on their nerves.
I think that's a good hint. I think that's a good suggestion.
I picked up on things like this.
You're very receptive, Gordon.
They're like, what? Your boat, is it okay?
I think you should go check. Maybe take the week. Oh, that's awesome. So what got you into cycling? Is that something you've always done?
That's the way I got around as a kid, you know. But actually, a long distance cycling, riding, you know, I was in the Navy. And, you know, I was stationed on a really crowded naval base. And by the time we only had one car, my wife worked. And by the time we could get in the car and go 8 miles down the road to the Norfolk Naval Base, these guys in bicycles were just flying by us. Mm. You know? And so a lady in the apartment complex that we lived was selling a Ross 10-speed, just rubber-rotted tires and everything else. So I had to go to, you know, bike shop and buy some new tires for it. But, I mean, I rode that bike back and forth, you know. The rest of the time I was there, and really got used to it, got out of the Navy. And as soon as I, you know, got on my feet, I bought my first really nice bike. And that's back in the day where, you know, you actually had still wore your tennis shoes, but you had the leather straps you cinched down on top of your shoes, you know. And I would ride almost a century, at least every other Sunday. A century is more than 100 miles, you know. And there was no padded bicycle shorts. You just had a strong butt, you know, and you know, or anything like that. So it's a whole lot of different, you know, area than we are now. I mean, it's like,
so you know, if you say 100 miles in a day, just that was your Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And that was highway, just getting on the road and going somewhere.
I would ride from my house about 25 miles down to the riverfront in Little Rock, Arkansas, and then I would ride about a 70-mile loop back and forth up and down the river with your friends. And then I'd say, okay, if I leave now, then I've got about 120 miles by the time I make it back home. And since my feet were strapped in, there was a lot of times my yard had a bank on it. So a lot of times I would just ride into my driveway, right across the front door and just, or front yard, and just lean into the grass bank and just fall over because I was, you know, it's too spent to do anything else. So
I was saying, right, because you're too exhausted to go another. Wow.
You know, when your legs have the little shimmy, you know, going on.
Yeah. What's a good run for you today? If you and Darcy were going to go out this Sunday, what's a good bike ride?
This early in the season, you know, we could easily do 30 to 40 miles. You know.
Wow.
You know, this early, you know, later on, we could do it later. We, you know, down in the Butler office, we actually had started last year, we would bring both bikes down to the Butler office, leave a vehicle, and both we would just ride home, which is, you know, it was 54 miles door to door, you know, after work, you know, on Fridays, and then maybe Saturday or Sunday, we would turn back around and ride back down to get that vehicle, you know. We always knew that, hey, one of us is coming down here, we'll get the cars later next week, you know. You know, but
awesome.
Yeah, we love stuff like that. The Katy Trail. Gravel riding is getting to be, you know, the way it's safer, you know. Yeah, actually it's safer, you know, it's
really,
you're getting away from the traffic, all the textures, people in their cell phones are dangerous to, you know, everybody in the world right now. And, so you know, you have no defense on the street, you know, whenever you have a car and somebody's not paying attention, then it's a whole lot less traffic on the gravel roads,
That's true.
A whole lot more scenic and peaceful. And typically we never get passed on a gravel road. I mean, cars will actually just stack up behind us or stop. They're afraid to, you know, fling a rock on you or something like that. So you got to listen and be courteous and get over and stop, and then they'll pass you, you know.
Wow. I mean,
it's a whole different riding community, but, you know, the dog situation is a lot more intensive out there.
Yeah.
you have to be pretty confident about how you control animals. Yeah.
Yeah. So are you, when you're on the bike, are you guys like mic'd? Are you talking to each other? Are you listening to music or is it just silence?
I don't like music and bicycles.
Yeah. And that's the way I've always been too. I would never, ever, ever try to compete in your league. I love getting on my bike and going for a ride. But for me, that's maybe 15 miles. That's a really good ride. That would be a lot, but I'm same way. I use that. I've always told Mark, that's my therapy. Whether it's walking on the trail or running or biking, I try not to take my phone. It's a safety thing now where I usually do take my phone because I feel bad if I don't. But I try to stay off my phone.
Right.
Definitely don't listen to music because it's just that's the one time in your day where there isn't something coming at you, right? A screen, a person, something where you're obligated to listen or you're obligated to pay attention. And so I use it as much for physical health, mostly for my mental health, of kind of having that silence time and getting out. Like you said, I grew up in the country, and my best girlfriend lived about 15 miles into town. And we would either I would ride to her house or she would ride to mine, or we'd meet at the little town in between. And they had a little like cafe that we'd stop and get ice cream or whatever. And then each of us ride home. So I grew up doing that and always thought, I grew up in Iowa. So you're probably familiar with Ragbri. Have you ridden it? Three? I knew you probably had. That was always the goal of mine. And timing was never right. I never did do that.
There's still time.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that best friend from when I was growing up is still my best friend today. She actually told me that she lives in Sioux City, Iowa now. And that's actually where it's starting.
Nice.
So we're tinkering around with maybe riding for a day, but we'll see.
Well, here's the deal about Ragbri. People think you're riding 460 or, you know, whatever miles in a week's time. You're really not. Even today's ride, that may be 70 miles. It's not a 70 mile ride. You get on your bike and you ride to breakfast, which could be 8 or 9 miles down the road. You have breakfast and you sit around, you talk to the people of the town and stuff like that. Then you get back on your bike and you ride another 5 or 10 miles down the road. And you just keep doing that all day long. You're in no hurry on regular.
Yeah.
You're not getting on your bike and riding 75
not
miles.
Not a race.
Not a race. You know, there's water slides and there's lakes and rivers. Yeah. There's fun things to do. And, farm equipment, carnival rides. I mean, they'll turn farm equipment into carnival rides. It's crazy. Yeah. And, really that's Ragbri. It's just a bunch of small rides that carry you throughout the entire week.
Well, you've given me the motivation. I'm going to call my friend tonight. And we'll see if we can sign up.
You absolutely can do it, you know. And when you're talking about only 15 or whatever miles, one of the greatest cyclists that ever lived is Eddie Merckx, Merckx, I believe. And I have one of his vintage 1980s titanium bikes on my wall at home.
Oh, nice.
It says, ride as far or short or as often or as little as you want, but ride.
There you go. That's beautiful. Put that on a pillow. That's a beautiful message. You could parlay that into a lot of good life lessons, right? It's who are you in competition with? Yourself from yesterday.
That's it.
That's all that we should be worried about, is be a little bit better than ourself was yesterday. Well, on that note, I always like to ask all my guests kind of what keeps you motivated? Where do you get your motivation, your inspiration? Are you a reader? Are you a podcaster? Do you love, where do you get your, you give advice all day and you have to give encouragement all day to your team and your staff? Where do you get some of that? Where are you filling your picture with, your picture with?
And you know what? I got asked this question not too long ago and I really didn't know the answer. And I guess I really still don't. I take so much joy in all the things I do. I like to do them all well. You know, that's why like in the backpacking that we're just getting into, REI loves us to death. You know, I feel like I'll probably be on their board of directors before long. And I should have bought stock before I started the purchase process.
You should have.
And because I think our backpacking, closet and our biking stuff is now on par. And but with that said, I mean, there's so much inspiration out there that I glean from others like that have done through hikes of the AT, the Appalachian Trail, the Pacific Coast Trail, all those things that I really want to do, the Ozark Highland Trail and things like that. I mean, things like that are very local to us. I mean, we can be on the Ozark Highland Trail in 4 hours from here, I mean, we don't have to go across the country or stay gone, forever. And, so seeing things like that, fishing, I love to fish, when every day is different and you get out there and sometimes I don't care if I catch a fish or not. It's just about being out there in this great thing I call Harry's Pond, the 55,000 acre impoundment that is, the Truman Reservoir, Harry's Pond, Harry Truman, right? And I guess I really take it like this. It's, the life in front of me is so much more important than anything that happened yesterday, And I want to, every day have the same mentality that what can I do today? What can I learn today? What good can I do today? Did I do any good at all? And that's why, I love the knowledge that we have from all the different experiences and resources that we've encountered of all these years from having to talk to you under a church awning about what the hell is a Medicare supplement? What's the difference? To now, basically, I read the Social Security palms. That's how big of a nerd I am. People don't think I'm a nerd, but Social Security has palms. It's a program operations manual. And a friend of mine at Social Security turned me on to it. And actually, every rule and process in the Social Security Administration is in the palms, POMS. And I actually read it. And, it's a wealth of information and it's a wealth of guidance that you can give to your clients, without having to sit on hold for an hour. I'm right here, And so things like that, it's like I said, it's, the life in front of me is so much more important than my yesterdays that, it doesn't matter what I've done before. It doesn't matter how many times I've done it before. I need to do it exactly the same or better tomorrow.
I love that. And I think you say you're not sure where you get all of that. I think it's self, you're a self-driven person, but you're also a seeker. That would kind of be a word that I would use for you. You're a seeker of information. You're a seeker of what's next. Like you said, if you're going to do something, you're not going to do it halfway. You're going to seek all the information, education, background, read it all up, find about everything, and then go do it. And that's a pretty admirable way to live your life. So I appreciate you spending some time with us here today, Gordon. I've learned a ton. Appreciate you. Appreciate all you and Darcy and your whole team do, but just appreciate the friendship over the years and can't wait for our next adventure and to see where that road takes us both. But appreciate you, and I hope you have a great day, and I appreciate everybody listening in, and I know everybody got a lot out of this, Gordon. I appreciate it.
You bet, Joanne. Thank you very much.
All right. Have a great day, everybody. Bye, guys.